Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Now we'll be talking about season two of The Mandalorian. Your host and my co-host, Shady from Saskatoon.
This is the way.
Also with us is Red Ink.
What up?
So, Mandalorian season two, also called the December spike in subscriptions for Disney Plus, has finished.
Part two.
Yes. And it was good. It was very, very good. I was very happy with it. I thought that it did everything admirably well. It was well constructed, and I enjoyed it. It was, you know, more. It was more of what we wanted from the after the first season, and things we didn't even know we wanted in the second. I'm speaking in broad strokes, of course, but JT, you go on.
Well, I agree with Ben completely in that statement. Oh my God, reality is falling apart. No, I love the first season unequivocally. I love the second season almost as much. There is, you know, after my long association with my co-hosts here, folks, there's the, dear God, all I can see are the cracks now. There are certain little things, nitpicky, like I said, that I didn't like in this season, but it didn't ruin my enjoyment of it at all. I love how they ended it. I like the potential for this part of the Star Wars universe going forward. There are certain, you know, glass, tape on the glasses type nitpicky fanboy complaining. Is like, dear fucking God, just let us enjoy the show for once, that, you know, going forward. But yeah, I mean, I loved it. How about you, Red?
It was good. I enjoyed the second season. It wasn't it wasn't as good as the first, in my opinion. And it's hard to watch shows when you can see, when you've been trained to see the fucking guy behind the curtain.
You mean Captain Blue Jeans?
Well, not just Captain Blue Jeans. It's just, you can tell certain things when you're trained, like you've taken training to write and all that stuff. And from the first, not the first, it was actually probably the third episode, it felt like it was winding down, like something was going to end soon. And I could tell that right away.
Yeah, I mean, at least this chapter, it's when you look at it, season one and two are basically one book. I mean, every episode, it's chapter this, chapter that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm just going to say right now, my biggest gripe with this season is Disney, Lucasfilm, whatever. You have learned nothing in the last 10 years when it comes to, you know, let's just call it deep fake technology. I mean, Disney, even in 2010 with Tron Legacy, you guys like shit the bed with like young Kevin Flynn before we moved to the present day portion of the Tron Legacy story. Like, he looked creepy as fuck. And even when you got into the computer, Clue looked like the same creepy. And there are fans even in the last 5 years that have been able to like redo that scene and make it look so good. So when, again, spoiler alert, we should have put that at the beginning, when Luke goddamn Skywalker showed up and they takes off his hood, the puppet, the physical puppet they used in Child's Play, like Child's Play 1, had more emotional range than whatever CGI witchery they were using for that.
When I saw that, I instantly saw scenes from fucking, what do you call it, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
I could literally tell you which scenes those faces were taken from. They were taken from when Darth Vader and Luke are talking in the, like, on that weird fucking platform.
On the forest moon?
Yeah. I could tell that right away. I could tell that There's other faces taken from other scenes as well. Like, you could tell by the hairstyle changing slightly. The second one would probably be from, what do you call it? Jabba the Hutt's fucking palace. When Luke talks to Jabba.
Yeah.
And they literally took the scenes from, like, pieces of those scenes and just grafted it onto somebody's face. And
Yeah.
that's why his lips don't match up with what he's saying.
Yeah. I mean, and they even had, I don't know if you guys saw, there were memes or internet, like fan edited pictures out there that they did the face swap with Sebastian Stan for like Bucky from the Marvel movies and Luke Skywalker, and it's scary. Like, yeah, I had to do double takes the first time I saw that because you almost can't tell. Like, that's how similar in facial structure him and Mark Hamill have.
The
So,
Sebastian Stan has a big butt chin, which Mark Hamill doesn't have.
well,
He had a cleft. It wasn't as big, you're right. But the one thing to keep in mind whenever they do this facial replacement, the software is good, and with big computers it's better. But you really have to like get someone who has similar bone structure to be the stand-in, or else it's not going to work as
yeah.
well.
Well, I think if they had used Sebastian Stan as a stand-in and put a little more effort into it. I mean, you look
They
at, well, look at Sam Jackson in Captain Marvel. That was some pretty good de-aging that they
it
did there. It wasn't
wasn't
perfect.
it, it was a little weird. He looked a little plasticky in some places,
I would have
and
taken that over this Muppet.
you say that, but I have to be really honest, and I'm not saying that this was a great facial replacement, but it was. For Hollywood, it was pretty good because you have to keep in mind that Star Wars has done quite a few facial replacements the last couple of years, and the cinematic track record for facial replacements in Star Wars is bad, ridiculously bad, and there's a reason for it. There is a software suite out called Deepfakes that is. It's commercial software. It's used by lots of people who are not professionals, and. And the way deepfakes works is you have to sample a face. You basically sample a face. And if you get like 6 hours worth of a face, it's pretty good with facial tracking and algorithmic learning and grafting with light and shadows, etc. But to get a really good deepfake, you need like 30 hours of face time. And. Number one honest truth is Mark Hamill after Return of the Jedi, there I don't think you have 30 hours of video for him in a 5 year period after that. So it's they had so they had to use the cheaper method. The other thing to mention is VFX people are in a union. And you might be like, well, how does that matter? Because they're in a union, there's certain union rules like you're only allowed to do this, and that with when you come to software. And I'm pretty sure that deepfakes, the actual deepfake software, is not accredited by the Hollywood VFX union, because it's commercial software. They have to use like a really weird suite that's accredited to them that, from what I heard, has a lot of tools in it but doesn't work the same as deepfakes.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, that is honestly my biggest gripe. I don't know if you guys have seen any of the fan discussions, and I use that term loosely. Like the fact that was it episode six, Mando, I can't pronounce his name. I always stumble over it. Mando takes baby Yoda to this planet
Grogu?
to the. You know what? It's not a bad name. It's just, I like Baby Yoda.
Well,
It's.
you have to keep in mind the name of his name in the scripts and in all the promotional material is the child.
That's cool. I call him Baby Yoda.
I know, and I just have to say I do love the fact that in everything official it's the child because it sort of harkens back to the spaghetti western slash lone wolf and cub roots of this of this storytelling, and I think that again is something I just really enjoy.
Yeah. No, I enjoy that too. Like, they take him, but it's in episode 6, they take Baby Yoda, Grogu, the child, to this planet where there's the ruins of this Jedi temple. I don't know if you guys laughed at it. I like how after it took Mando like 3 tries to like, okay, maybe I'm not gonna get through this force field that explosively throws me backwards. Like, I know it's concerned for the kid and all that, but Ahsoka Tano sent them there. You know, he's gonna commune with the force, and any other Jedis that are out there that are left after the purge, you know, they'll find him and they'll train him. Because
Actually,
she,
I'll let
yeah.
you finish. I was just going to point out that you actually reminded me of my biggest gripe about the second season.
All right, so yeah, so and that's, I've seen a lot of fans bitching and complaining that, well, why couldn't it been like this Jedi or some new Jedi? Why did it have to be Luke? I was like, okay, first of
Well,
all, sorry, you go red.
it had to be Luke because that was the only pregnant person that people would unanimously say, okay. He can take the child. If it was another fucking Jedi, people would fucking flip out.
Cal.
Like, I thought for sure it was going to be Cal Kestis that was going to show up because the actor is in the age range. He is affordable and he can play himself because he looks exactly like himself as he does in the fucking video games. So I thought for sure. Like, okay, they summoned a Jedi. A Jedi is going to show up. Like, at the last episode, I was like, okay, a Jedi is going to save, not save him, but help him out. Because I didn't think Luke would fucking tear through the Dark Troopers like they're fucking toilet paper. But I thought a Jedi would show up and help him out. I thought for sure it was going to be either two things. It was going to be Cal or Ezra. I thought it was going to be Cal because, like I said, the actor is affordable, can play himself, blah, blah, blah. Second one would be Ezra because Dave Filoni is in charge, is partially in charge of the series, and he created Ezra.
Yeah, I had 3 Jedi in mind. Well, the out way outside dark horse was Mace Windu. I thought, you know what? There is a very slim chance that he could have survived the purge. I would have loved to see Mace motherfucking Windu back, but fine, he didn't show up. I guess Cal was the other one, although I kind of forgot about him. Cameron, whatever, the guy who played the not Joker on Gotham, and then I can't pronounce the actor's name, but it's the guy I played Ravi on iZombie, who's like this Indian British actor who played like this medical examiner, and he had joked online about, you know, I could play an adult Ezra Bridger, and I was like, yeah, I would have loved to see Ezra come in and, you know, save the day. I mean, and that's the other thing I've seen a lot of fans bitching about is Luke like mowing down the dark troopers.
Well,
Like, I like yeesh.
I'm sorry for interrupting you again, JJ.
No, it's all good.
The Dark Troopers we've seen are stage one. They haven't been programmed the way they should be because Thrawn programs them and makes them extremely fucking deadly towards Luke. Because Thrawn study like in the novels later on, whatever. Thrawn studies the Jedi and learns all their tactics and actually knows more about the Jedi than Luke. And he uses that against Luke. And he sets Dark Troopers with that information.
Didn't Moff Gideon mention that, or one of the Imperials mentioned that this was, they were third, like the droid dark troopers were
He means
like
the
third gen?
programming, the bodies are third generation, but
Oh,
they don't
okay.
have the anti-Jedi tactics, is what Red
All
said.
right, and that was the clone doctor dude from the first season with, you know, Red's favorite character, the client.
So I'm actually surprised, JT, you didn't say you didn't say you wanted to see Rina Romano showing up as Kyle Katarn.
I honestly have very little information about that whole thing, Ben. I thought it would have been really cool if like Sam Witwer had shown up as like some other Jedi, you know, because he played with Starkiller in the, I forget which Star game, which Star Wars game was that? Where he, yeah, Force Unleashed. You know, he's mainly known as voicing Darth Maul and the Emperor in like the Clone Wars and Rebels animated series. But I'm gonna ask you guys. Sorry.
I'm okay with Luke showing up. In fact, I was very happy to see him. Go ahead, Red.
I'm not going to say that I was disappointed with Luke showing up. I was fucking happy. Like, when he showed up, I was a fucking five-year-old child.
Oh, yeah.
There are so many videos of people reacting to that scene, and there are grown men crying. And it's a genuine cry. And one guy even said, I've been waiting 30 years to see the Luke Skywalker back again. And he did not write the Cry of the Sequel trilogy, but he kind of did. And it's a sentiment we all share. Like this is the Luke we want to see. And it's not even about the combat or him tearing through the dark. It's the fact that his mannerisms, I know that he sampled his voice and comped his sentences from previous recorded dialogue, but they kind of had to. I read that they actually
were going to protect the child. My life.
They were going to bring in the guy who did the Luke voice for the video games, but Jon Favreau heard the performance and said no.
I heard they got Mark Hamill to come and voice that bit there. But
Mark Hamill sounds like this now.
Yeah.
From what I've heard, they had him do it as well, but then they said no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and one of the other, it's not that I agree with the nerds bitching about this, but I haven't watched all of the Clone Wars animated series. So the whole, from what I understand with Bo-Katan, like Starbuck from the modern Battlestar Galactica, Katie Sackhoff, the whole thing with the Darksaber at the end there, where Mando comes in with the Darksaber, he's got Moff Gideon at sword point, and she's like, well, no, I can't take that because, you know, it has to be one in combat. But I remember from the episodes dealing with the Mandalorian in the later part of Rebels, you know, she took the Darksaber from Sabine, but that's before the Mandalorian purge, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so from what I've sussed out and doing some research is she could take the Darksaber then, because the Mandalorian, like Mandalore hadn't fallen and the Mandalorian culture was still alive and active, and it would have been more socially or politically accepted that she could just accept it like that. But now that they're been blown to the far corners of the universe, she has to adhere to this older tradition of winning the Darksaber through combat.
I have a theory about that.
All right.
So you're right that Bo-Katan did take the Darksaber willingly without combat being involved. This is headcanon. I'm going to just get in front and say this is headcanon.
I'm cool.
Maybe she sees the fall of Mandalore is because she cheated for the tradition. And she's like, well, now, no, I have to do this right now. And also, I have to add, I've talked to Red about this in the past, is I like the subtlety that they added to Mandalorian culture in this season. But specifically because all we got to see in this show of Mandalorian culture is just Mando and the Children of the Watch. Of course, anyone who's watched Clone Wars would have seen more of it, but someone who's watching just Mandalorian would just know about Mando's quote cult, about the whole this is the way, and you're not allowed to show your face. Go ahead, Red.
The whole cult thing, this is the way, that was a new thing. Like when it first started, when season one first started, I was confused. I was like, this has never happened before. Like, Mandalorians don't act like this. They take off their helmets all the fucking time and shit like that. Like,
yeah.
What's going on?
That's what I'm saying. For a first-time viewer, if you only saw the movies and you watched just The Mandalorian, you would be like, okay, that we're learning more about, not learning something different. And what I liked about this is you have Mando meet Bo-Katan and her two sidekicks, and by the way, that scene is amazingly well acted by the suit actor. I think it's John Wayne's grandson in the suit in that scene, because Mando has a has it to where as soon as he saw others in Mandalorian armor show up and save him from the fishermen, he instantly is willing to share them information. He's instantly willing to trust them because he's like, these are my people. And he's talking with them, he's divulging, and then the second the helmet starts being removed, he stops and he gets instantly guarded. The body acting and body language is amazing. And he's like, where did you get that armor? Because now he's in, these people, these fuckers killed my people and stole their armor. And then finally it's like, Bo-Katan's like, you guys are a cult, you guys are are ridiculous, and no Mandalorian actually does this stuff with This Is the Way. And so he thinks that he thinks she thinks he's a heretic. He thinks that she's abandoned tradition. And then at the end of the season, when he's holding the Darksaber, he doesn't give a fuck what this is. He doesn't care. And he's like, okay, it's yours. I don't care. And she's like, no, the tradition says that I have to win this by combat.
Yeah. The
And I love that.
I well yeah, no, I love that too. It's like different religious backgrounds or different cultural backgrounds from like within even a country. The people in the South worship God differently than people in the North, stuff like that. I thought that was really interesting that, you almost hear a what the fuck come out from Pedro Pascal's voice. Although I don't know in that exact scene if it was John Wayne's grandson. I know Pedro Pascal does some of the suit acting, but more often than not it's what's his name? Brendan Wayne, who is like the grandson of the great John Wayne, and Latif Crowder, who's a stunt coordinator slash actor. I don't know if you guys ever seen that Mortal Kombat Rebirth video on YouTube where Baraka had the blades implanted into his arms. He's the guy that played Baraka. But anyway, that whole scene of Mando's like, the fuck, and then getting into it. And I found that's something I would like to see in future stories, with The Mandalorian is, Din Djarin. It's not Djarin, right?
It's Din Djarin. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Din Djarin, like as he learns more about, because literally all he knows is what he was indoctrinated with as a child of the Watch. And that, and then, like, when he takes the helmets off, and I was like, well, no, that happens with, like, oh, that moment of, oh, there are different parts of Mandalorian culture that do it differently.
And
I know.
it's like go ahead. One of the things I liked about that episode as well was Bo-Katan's all on his ass through the whole fucking episode after that. It's like she's constantly fucking badgering him about his fucking religious beliefs. It's not like she's out there just fucking, oh, your religion sucks. She's giving him little gripes, like little fucking pokes and prods about his fucking what he believes in.
Including mockingly saying to him, this is the way.
Yeah. And I mean, that just comes from like her own, I don't mean this in any great negative way, but her own like narrow-minded, like her take. I mean, it's religion, it's politics, it's all of
Well,
spirituality, all of that with their culture. Like she sees Mandalorian culture as this and Djarin sees it as that. I mean, and that's going to make for some interesting drama going on.
especially I it makes me think that and we're going to talk later on about season three, but if they do a season three that focuses on Mando again, there is a there is something that I think is possible if that's the storyline they're going to go with is when the children of the Watch find out that that Jin Katara, you know, what's his name? I'm just gonna call him
Mando.
Mando. Holds the Darksaber and is, you know, they'll see that as their chance to, quote, rightfully gain the throne of Mandalore.
Yeah. Or you
And
could also have a story.
push the indoctrination of the Children of the Watch as mainstream Mandalorian culture.
Yeah. Or you could have them find out that he took his helmet off like that in front of these heretics.
I think the fact that he's holding the Darksaber, they'll forgive that.
You've been religious fanatics.
Throw
They
him to
don't pay
Mandalore.
attention to. No, just in general. Like, think of every movie, TV show, comic book, whatever you've ever seen involving religious fanaticism. Not a lot of them. Oh, sure, he's got the Darksaber. He's a ruler now. You took your hat off! Like, there's gonna be elements and elements within those elements that are gonna try and take him out because you violated this sacred law. It's going to make for some interesting television going forward. I mean, and also amongst like Bo-Katan's retinue there, you had, I just know her as Sasha Banks, but I was like, look, I didn't see Sasha Banks in the credit. No, they used her real name. It's Mercedes Vernado. Oh, wow, she has a real name. I thought that was her, Sasha was her actual given name. We also brought back to see, you got Ming-Na Wen as Fennec Shand from the first season. You got, what was Amy Sedaris as Pelimoto, like that crazy woman space mechanic with the little server droids. I love that. And apparently Misty Rosas is the suit actor that did the on-camera work for Kuiil, who's the character that Nick Nolte voiced in the first season. She was the frog lady, which is one of my favorite episodes.
And
And
let's
is
talk
it
about the first couple episodes because I think that it did more of what The Mandalorian was good at, the classic spaghetti western story of the lone gunslinger entering a town for a purpose, and he gets wrapped up in others' dealings and has to settle them before he goes further on his quest. That's
Oh, shit.
quintessential, well done.
Did you know John Leguizamo was in the first episode? He's the guy that Mando strings up from a streetlight.
Ah, I couldn't tell. He didn't have any makeup on.
Yeah, but he was like hunching down, so he's going back to those acting skills from the Spawn movie.
Well, they fucking deepened his voice. It's like,
Yeah.
because John Leguizamo sounds like this. He sounds very high pitched. That when that guy was like, "I'm just the Mandalorian."
He didn't sound like Stallone.
That would have been fucking hilarious. Yeah,
Stallone
no,
would do
that.
it, I think, if you give him enough money. He did fucking Mortal Kombat 11.
Yeah. No, I love the whole first episode story of Mando having to go to like this way out town, way out in the wastes of Tatooine, and he meets this Marshal Cobb Vanth who initially thinks he is a Mandalorian. And this is like the first instance of Mando, you don't take your helmet off for anything. Where, Oliphant sits down, he pulls a bottle and he takes the head off. He's like, drink.
Well, he outright says when he first starts sitting down is, "I've never met a Mandalorian before," and
Yeah.
so he never made a secret that he was a Mandalorian,
Well, no, but I mean, Mando was like, oh, he's wearing Mandalorian armor. He's a Mandalorian, So.
the other thing to mention about that scene is I like this Marshall character, the Cobb, what's his name, because
Offense.
yeah, it's like this. It's quintessential Western stuff, you know, the small town sheriff that has way too much on his hands and is barely able to keep up, and the lone gunslinger coming into town that is willing to solve his troubles at a cost. It's quintessential for a reason, because it's good.
Yeah. I even love that little bit where Cobb is telling his story and how he wasn't even really a lawman when he first comes to this town. He just saw, how bad it was for all these good, simple folk trying to eke out a living. What's that?
Story was a lie, by the way.
Yeah. But I love that bit of the thing. And then, do you think anything with the Jawas was real? Like, he made a deal for the armor? Or do you think he just blew those little Mogwai-sounding motherfuckers away?
He made a deal for it, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
But he had... In the book, he actually had to kill his partner, I think, in order to fucking get the armor.
Well, he had to like steal those crystals. Because when he tells the story to Mando, it's like, oh, I really luckily and accidentally got these crystals that are worth a shit ton of money when I ran out in the middle of the desert. No, he was there for a heist. He stole those on purpose.
He had a partner.
Yeah.
And I love, like, basically, as you see this, was a greater crate dragon, like this giant, you know, almost like a graboid, but on crank digging, like the town almost gets knocked over when this thing comes through.
It tore straight through the mountain and popped out the top.
Yeah.
What I love about the crate dragon is I still don't think we got a good sense of its size. Like, when you have that scene where Cobb and the Tusken Raiders are sitting down talking and they got their little model and Mando's like, no, that's the scale. And Cobb sort of realizes, what the fuck did I get into?
Yeah. What did you guys think of how they, like, that whole, like, where Mando and Cobb were like, look, you guys got to put your shit aside and work with the sand people. And for anybody to survive, because this thing is literally so big, you can't take it out on your own. I love how they got that whole Jonah and the whale thing with how they dealt with it, where Mando just stands there, like one arm holding this bantha that's been strapped down with all these explosives. And he's like, oh, I made a grave error. And then he gets swallowed and flies out and ba-boom.
I love how Mando does a Boba Fett on Cobb.
Yeah,
he smacks the back of Cobb's Boba Fett's jetpack and causes him to fly out of control.
Yeah,
Boba really should have that looked at. It's, you know, I also like the fact that they outright said that no, the reason why this crate dragon's so fucking big is because it just finished eating a Sarlacc. The Sarlacc.
Yeah, I'm gonna ask you, Red. What did you? Was there anything in particular, if we haven't mentioned already, did you like about this first episode?
I like the first episode. Yeah, like I like Cobb Vanth. A lot of people are like, oh, the story's different. It's different from the novels. No, he's fucking lying. I don't know why people don't get in Star Wars that people lie.
Like, from a different point of view.
Fucking. Like, fucking, what do you call it, Han Solo, I did it in 12 parsecs. It's a fucking lie. And then they make a movie where he actually does it in 12 parsecs.
By going through a hole of some sort, or a ditch or something in space. I don't know, a sloppy storytelling.
But yeah, I was like, anyways. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Like, there was a lot of good moments. It was like a good fucking episode. It wasn't spectacular, but it was a good fucking episode.
Yeah. And that, you know, that mic drop at the end where there's this dude watching as Mando takes off from, like, the sand people and the town folk carving up this beast. And he turns around, oh my god, it's Temuera Morrison! Boba Fett's alive!
Could have been Captain Rex.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been.
What I a lot I liked about that whole sequence with Boba Fett, mainly because the makeup job they did on him was fantastic. If you've ever watched the original trilogy, the original version of the original trilogy, the original voice actor for Boba Fett had a really gruff voice. He sounded like he saw some shit, and he's grizzled and scarred, and then you watch the prequel trilogy, and you see this. This pretty boy Kiwi guy as, yeah, I'm Boba Fett. No, I'm Jango Fett, and Boba Fett's my clone son. And it's you don't get that sense of this guy who's seen some shit. under the helmet anymore, especially when they redubbed the original voice with the Jango Fett guy. And now, all of a sudden, now Boba Fett matches the vocal description he grew up with. You know, this scarred, grizzled guy who's seen some shit.
Yeah. I mean, physically seen some shit. Because I love the makeup they did on Morrison's face to make him look like 100% fucked up like that. And it's something that when you look at his armor, like when Vance wearing it, it looks like all pitted and dinged and everything. And then I realize it's just scratched up to hell, and it's just the paint that's worn off, because that's Beskar armor. And later on, like once Boba tracks down Mando and he gets his armor back, and in a very explosive goodbye, say so long to one of my favorite ships in the Star Wars canon, you know, the Razor Crest, like he gets the paint redone on it, and somehow it made it look more plasticky.
Overall, I just the way that they handled the Boba Fett armor, I thought was very good, because the one thing that you have to realize is the original look of the original Boba Fett armor is something that LucasArts has been very protective of. Like, there's been lots of people who build replica armors, and if LucasArts sees someone who gets like the scratches just right, they actually get pissed for some reason. I knew a guy who actually did a replica Boba Fett jetpack and helmet, and LucasArts contacted him and said, "Hey, look, you can't match these pits and scratches exactly." And he's like, "Well, why not?" And they're like, "Well, you're pissing us off," is basically what the answer they got was. So I like the fact that they have this armor that they had to painstakingly recreate, this time with the blessing, because they're the same company. And I also like the fact that that when you see Cobb first wearing it, it looks like a little boy wearing his brother's suit, because he's small in it.
It just does not look good, but still Beskar, so it's going to take a pounding.
Like, seeing Cobb Vanth in that armor was a great visual, because he turns around, you see Cobb Vanth, and you're like, that's not Boba Fett. Who the fuck is this guy?
Who the fuck is this skinny little dude, this twerp?
Yeah. And then we move on, like, in the second episode, where we meet one of my new favorite side characters in Star Wars canon, the Frog Lady. And we realize that Baby Yoda Grogu is a genocidal bastard.
Well, keep in mind, the eggs were not fertilized. He was not killing anyone.
Yeah, I know. I just like making that joke.
What I love about the second episode and the whole plot of that is it's another Western story. It's like the grizzled gunslinger agreeing to go to the next town on a stagecoach as long as he watches the pregnant banker's wife on the way there. The ability for them to draw in that well of Westerns to tell these stories is very impressive to me. And what I love is the fact that every time Mando is just sort of like dragging his feet on this assignment, you know, she's there to be like, no, you have to do this. You have to do this. I'm not letting you get away with this. You're doing this.
Yeah. And just the look of horror on the Frog Lady's face where she sees Baby Yoda slurp down one of the eggs. She's like, son of a bitch must pay.
She never saw him eat one at all.
No, she didn't.
Okay, then I'm misremembering that.
Mando saw him eat one. And then he basically said, you can't do that anymore.
The other thing is, she did have a look of horror on her face, but that's when she saw the spiders coming.
Yeah.
Okay, misremembering that then. Those spiders are fucking creepy.
Well, I liked also how the New Republic was, because it illustrated just the New Republic's grasp is tenuous at best.
Because they're way out on the rim in this series.
Loose at worst. And yeah, there's two X-Wing pilots, you know, standing off of Mando, like, you're doing some illegal shit, but you did kill this one guy and capture this other guy for us. So we'll just call it even. And he's like, hey, can you just at least help me patch this hole in my ship so I can leave? And they're like, stay out of trouble. And they leave him there.
Yeah. And then he somehow manages to get the ship to work despite having like missing 30% of it, and it has to space leap because he can't use hyperspeed because of the eggs and all that. And you know, they do get to the what planet was it that they were going to?
It was a water planet. It's one that I think is unique to this series. I don't think I've, or could have shown up in Clone Wars. I don't.
Moon called Trask. Says here.
Yes.
Yeah. And they get there, and that's where we meet Bo-Katan and.
Yes.
Everything. I love the one of the things I love about Bo-Katan in this is like you clearly like, this is however many years removed from when we last saw her. In Rebels,
she should be 60 or early 70s by now. By the way,
how come Obi-Wan is played by an old ass man, but she isn't?
Man, well, that skincare slower, regimen?
Something. Case that half was available.
Yeah, you know that she's getting desperate because like how much she's putting into this plan to steal this Imperial cargo ship that's like packed full of weapons. And you know, you see it in her eyes that she's like, no, we're getting a fucking ship. I love that. One of the other episodes I really loved was it the tragedy was the one with, or was it the next one? It was
Tragedy is the one where Baby Yoda gets kidnapped.
Yeah.
Yes, but
I was thinking of 15.
You're skipping over Ahsoka's appearance.
You mean the episode which is all set up for the Ahsoka series?
Yeah. Now, this brings up my major gripe about the series, and is that there is so much extra shit that never appeared in any of the movies. Wound up into this series, and it kind of doesn't piss me off, but it kind of makes me wonder, because I have a friend who loves fucking Star Wars. He actually fell out of love a little bit because of the sequels, but he's only seen the movies. He's never watched the book. He's never watched Clone Wars. He's never watched Rebels. He's an older gentleman. He's not a kid, so he doesn't like cartoons and shit like that. And then I gotta wonder, if he watched this series, like, is he gonna be super fucking confused? Because there's no fucking way he would know who Ahsoka is and how important she is to the series.
Probably.
It's... And the fact that she doesn't even consider herself a Jedi anymore, she's just a light side user that goes around, is doing her own gunslinger thing, if I may, during, you know, in this storyline now.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosario Dawson did a pretty good job. It's, you know, if you've seen Ahsoka in her previous appearances, specifically Rebels was her last appearance, and you sort of try to extrapolate that to this Ahsoka, you sort of get a sense like, yeah, I can see her getting to this point from that point. It doesn't feel entirely like they just put Ahsoka, they just put Rosario Dawson in some makeup and said, just be Rosario Dawson.
Well, the Ahsoka we saw in this was a fusion of Clone Wars and Rebels. Because in Rebels, Ahsoka was like, oh, I'm enlightened and I'm super calm and I'm...
Measured yeah.
Yeah, but if you've ever watched Clone Wars, you know... Ahsoka is extremely aggressive. She's not fucking super calm. She's not enlightened. That's one of the seeds, like, Ahsoka has seeds of the dark side planted in her because of fucking Anakin. And one of those is her aggressions. She can't stop, like, she loses her temper and shit like that. She's not a perfect fucking Jedi.
I mean, that was, like, the whole reason why she ended up leaving the Order in the series, if I'm correct.
She was excommunicated from the Order.
She was framed for a murder.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the Jedi was like, you're out, and she's like, fuck you, I didn't want to work here anyhow.
It wasn't that, it was nobody came to bat for her. Nobody stuck up for her except for Anakin. And at that point, Anakin had already, he was already a black sheep in the fucking by the Jedi.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, how the Jedi aren't as good as a lot of people make them out to be. That's an episode in and of itself. The one thing this is a very nitpicky thing for me, and I have no problem with Rosario Dawson playing Ahsoka. I really did enjoy her performance. It's my brain was turning her voice into Ashley Eckstein from Clone Wars and Rebels, because that to me is the voice of Ahsoka. But overall, I really like this episode. But like I said, this is essentially just set up for the Ahsoka streaming series that's going to be coming, where she's hunting down Thrawn and possibly still searching for Ezra, like how her and Sabine were doing at the end of Rebels. Do you think it was stunt casting that they got Michael Biehn in this episode?
It is a possibility, but I think it also was a case of them just doing everything. This episode, like I said, is just, it's another Western story. It's the two gunslingers meeting and agreeing to a mutually beneficial job, even though they have two different end goals. It's everywhere in this series. The Western theme's everywhere, but. The other thing I do like is the fact that they made this a good reason for Mando to show up on this planet. That was more than just meeting Ahsoka and setting up the backdoor pilot for the Ahsoka series. Well, backdoor pilot doesn't really make sense because the series is greenlit. It's to get the Beskar spear, which is extremely important in the rest of the series. So it's not completely out of nowhere. There's a reason for it.
Yeah. I did like the... Sorry, you go, Red.
There's a lot of good emotional parts in there as well. Like, after she interviews kind of Baby Yoda there, and she's like, I can't train him. I've seen what happens to a fully formed Jedi Knight when they have emotional attachments. Because she's remembering what happened to Anakin. And she's scared if she fucking... were to train Baby Yoda, she'd make another Darth Vader.
And so she basically says, I'm not going to be personally involved in this, but I'm not going to completely wash my hands of this either. I'm going to let the Force decide. Go to this ancient Jedi temple, put him on the rock, and the Force will decide.
And the Force decided for the perfect fucking person, the person who redeemed Darth Vader.
Yes.
And has some greater understanding of emotional balance than a lot of Jedi that he knew in Luke Skywalker.
And the tragedy is another fantastic episode that they crammed a lot in the tragedy. And you have the stuff with Baby Yoda and the Force, and then you have the Mexican standoff with Mando and Boba Fett.
Poor choice of words, considering a Mexican directed the episode.
Yeah, that's right. Robert Rodriguez directed this.
It's a turn of a phrase.
I know, I'm just saying.
You know, one of the things I loved in this episode is we got some on-camera action from Boba Fett before he gets his armor back. And, you really see that in Temuera Morrison's face. Because was that weird hook staff cudgel thing, was that supposed to be Beskar, or was that just like some sticky...
That's a Bantha stick he got from a Tusken Raider.
Okay, he's
dressed in Tusken robes as well. They didn't outright say it, but his attire and his weapons spoke the story that after he got out of the Sarlacc pit, the Tuskens rescued him, clothed him, and kept him for a while.
Yeah, but I mean, just see that scene where you got Ming-Na Wen playing Fennec Shand, and she's doing the sharpshooter thing and like picking these guys off one by one. You got Boba Fett running in and amongst the rocks, like just caving dudes' heads in with this thing.
And the other thing I have to mention about this scene is Robert Rodriguez makes sense as a director for this, because it has a little bit of his humor in there. In just the right moments. Like, you had the Stormtrooper commander going, like, charge in there! And he's like, no, they got us pinned down. They have the high ground. And he's like, I don't fucking care. Get out there. And the second the guy pops his head up, tink.
Yeah. Or I guess he says a Rodriguez moment where Boba Fett takes the one shuttle out with his backpack missile and it collides with the other one. It's like, yeah, one does not fuck with Boba Fett.
What I like about that part is it shows him aiming his missile at the other fucking the other shuttle, and then he ends up hitting the one on top. Then Mandalorian, that's a great shot. I was aiming for the other one.
Yeah. But that goes to like that from any other action movie. It's like I was aiming for his knee, you know, something like that.
Well, it's the Magnificent Seven line of that sounds fantastic, because it was like a 200-yard shot, and the guy's like, that shot was terrible. I was aiming for the horse.
Yeah. You know, got this. And I love when you look at the episodes, like you had Jon Favreau directed the first episode this season, like not just writing and producing, like he actually got behind the camera, which I thought was incredibly cool for this season. And we move on from here to honestly, The Believer is probably my second favorite episode this season. Because we bring back Bill Burr's Mayfeld from the Prison Break episode.
We did skip an episode.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay.
The one where they attacked the fucking clone, secret clone lab?
Yes.
Oh, right. The Carl Weathers and Cara Dune.
It was directed by Carl Weathers.
I love the evolution of Carl Weathers' character in this series, because at first he's like just this guild master for the Bounty Hunter Guild, and he has a strict profit motive, and now he's this guy who's like, he's trying to be the funny grandpa to Baby Yoda.
Yeah, and just like how he comes up and he's just like looking at the Razor Crest, and it's just dingy as hell, and he's like, had some fun, did you?
And he's like, nothing's too good. Nothing's too good for my friend Mando. Let's make this ship fucking shiny.
Well, the other thing is, you get a sleaze, like a huge bit of sleaze on him, because it is hinted that Moff Gideon has a spy in Mando's crew, and I'm 100% sure it's Carl Weathers' character, because he knows way too much about what fucking Mando's up to.
No, it was that one mechanic. Like, you could tell just the way he stood up, and the shot lingers on him for that second.
Yeah, the mechanic planted the fucking
tracker.
The tracker, but I'm pretty sure somebody's feeding him information, and I'm pretty sure that's Carl Weathers' character.
Actually, no. I'm not saying it isn't Red, but I have a better candidate. It's the fucking bookkeeper. That guy that Mando puts in the carbonite in the first episode of season one. And he turns, he's like, what the hell are you? Mando's like, what the hell are you doing here? And he's like, he's cooking the books for me. I mean, it could be Carl Weathers, Greef Targa. I think it's that dude. And then, you basically have them break into this supposedly disused Imperial base that's out in, like, this volcanic area of the planet, and you know, if we can take this out, this will make the whole planet free. And I thought it was weird phrasing, like it seemed a weird sentiment to me, but then you get that later on where the Jedi, or not the Jedi, the Rebel X-Wing pilots come and are like giving them the business, like, sir, we're just here to help. And because he makes mention in the episode about how, like, the New Republic, you know, they don't know what's goes on out here. They're, as you said, Ben, their control or their influence is tenuous at best. He's basically just fucking with the X-Wing pilots the whole time. I don't know.
He's like, your fucking flight recorder recorded the Razor Crest recently landed. He says, my flight recorder records a lot of things. It seems to think we're still on fucking Alderaan.
Yeah, and honestly, like, sure, it was the mechanic that put the tracking device on the Razor Crest. I honestly thought the whole season was going to be From here to the end, I mean, it's only 8 episodes long, but from here to the end was going to be Mando trying to track down Moff Gideon because they were going to grab Baby Yoda now, and then everything, and then we got, you know, the Jedi in the next episode, and then the tragedy.
You also got the mandated storyline that they had to do. Kathleen Kennedy stepped in and was like, "You have to push the sequels on this." So when they're in that cloning lab, you see little fucking
Snokes,
fucked up clones that look like Snoke, yeah. And a guy in the jeans in the background.
Yeah, the guy. Honestly, when I saw,
well, of like, course, there'd be someone working with jeans in the cloning lab.
Yeah. The one thing I loved about that scene where you see the Nope Snokes in the tubes there, it made me think of that scene in Alien Resurrection where they find the cloning lab and all the incredibly fucked up Ripley clones that they had gone through. And I honestly thought they were going to be racing, not like speeder bikes and TIE fighters in that canyon, but that they were going to be racing like lava. And I absolutely love the fact that they got one of those old school Imperial troop carriers. I thought that was just a nice callback to, you know, the history of the franchise. Especially where Gina Carano takes it off the top of this base and it crushes the accountant's speeder at the bottom there.
Now, what I love about After the Tragedy is the fact that now we're in a tight storyline of we need to get a posse together to do a big rescue, and I think that's you know, that's my favorite kind of story here. You know, it's like, you know, calling in all the favors, and you mentioned the Bill Burr episode, and what I loved about the beginning of that episode is you have Boba Fett coming in with his now cherry armor minus the giant ass dent in the forehead, and Bill Burr looks up and he's like, "Oh, okay, thank God, I thought you were someone else."
And then Mando walks in. He's like, "Oh shit!"
My favorite thing with Bill Burr appearing on the show is Bill Burr is notorious for saying, "I hate fucking Star Wars." But he thinks it's the nerdiest shit ever. He wants nothing to do with it. But they put him on the fucking show.
He hates Star Wars, but he likes paychecks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, see, I've seen an interview with him from the last month ago, where he's like, "Look, I don't hate it." Like, he kind of walks some stuff back. You know, he's not a huge fan, but he said, you know, he finds it interesting, and, you know, maybe I'll come back in season 3, that sort of thing. But I love how they get into, like, his background and stuff like Operation Cinder.
From the video games?
Yeah. And that Imperial officer that he shoots, I forget the actor's name. It's the guy who played Joe Chill in the Nolan Batman movies. And he was that one really degenerate soldier in the Doom movie. And I have never smiled harder at a bad guy's death in recent memory than when Mayfeld just pulls his blaster out and just point blanks this asshole in the chest. After he... basically, you know, I believe here is in the wiki, after a tense drink where Hess callously dismisses the Imperial soldiers and civilians who died in Operation Cinder, and Mayfield just, "Fuck you," boom. I love that. Well,
for a little background on Operation Cinder, it was like anybody would be fucked up in the head if they ever survived that, because it was one of Palpatine's last orders that, "Hey, if I die, you destroy everything.
Burn it to the ground, raise it, salt the earth.
Glass the planet. It's the only way to be certain." Yeah, and another thing in that episode that I found really interesting, just because I'm not sure how it works, maybe you guys can explain to me, like, Mando has to take his helmet off after all the time they spent talking about how he had to go around the corner and change into the Imperial armor, and then he has to make this connection with the little data, what do you call it, rod, and, you know, it has to scan your face. Now, you would think, does it they just, oh, you have a real face. It's like when you go to a website now and here, click this to prove you're not a robot. Like, wouldn't you have to be in the Imperial data system for it to, like, scan you like that and then let you make the connection?
Well, I have a plausible theory on this, that that Imperial data systems and the Imperial network is not like it used to be because, well, obviously, the collapse of the Central Empire. So you have all these remnants working, trying to work either together or apart, and you have moths trying to carve fiefdoms and shit. So it's like, so maybe they dialed back the security to prove you're a real human versus are you in the database, because maybe the database doesn't even really exist anymore.
This also
is getting into Mando starting to shy away from the way, because he even says my only priority is the child.
Well, I don't think it's him shying away from the way. It's he's desperate. Like, he wants the kid back. He's fucking scared something's going to happen, scared he's going to die. He's desperate to get him back. And yes, it's like, okay, I'm going to fucking go against my beliefs and do it.
Yes.
Yeah. But like I said, it's either the system's broken, or maybe that's something we'll see in season three, that, you know, it's in the, I just thought it was really interesting. And I do like Mayfeld's sniper shot at the end, where even Cara Dune and Fennec Shand, I was like, that was a hell of a shot, where, you know, they're going away on Slave One, and he grabs Boba's sniper rifle and just one shot the whole place, which I also thought was how he gives him his helmet. He gives Mando his helmet back. He's like, I never saw your face. And well, if he's going to follow the way, there's only one person that really knows what he looks like now, because they killed all the witnesses.
The other thing I have to mention is, you know, the final episode of The Rescue. We have to talk about that next. Go
before,
ahead.
Just sort of interrupt, Ben, how they end the tragedy with Mando's call to Gideon. And he repeats, like, he does his version of Gideon's little message from the end of season one. Like, just a like, little bit of science, just to mess with Gideon. He's like, I'm coming. You ain't going to stop me.
Yes. And the other thing, like I said, it's The Rescue, I love, is just that the whole thing of The Rescue is almost perfect. You start with, as Red says, Mando is desperate. He is like, I have to save the kid. The child, I have to save the child. And so he is willing to do anything. Like, he goes up to Bo-Katan, who he didn't even consider a true Mandalorian, and he's like, fine, I'll do whatever you say. I just need your help.
Yeah. And then we have Sasha Banks and Boba Fett having the dueling flamethrower thing there. I thought that was just...
Including a jetpack-based wrestling move?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, you don't fuck with Boba Fett.
Well, she doesn't know that.
The other thing I liked about that scene is, before that and during the tragedy, people were like, oh, Boba Fett's confirmed to be a Mandalorian, blah, blah, blah. And fucking Bo-Katan straight out says, you're not a fucking Mandalorian. You don't deserve that armor.
It's my father's.
And then Boba Fett's like, I never said I was.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, and that almost seems to conflict what he's talking about in an earlier episode, like in the tragedy, well, where, you know, my dad fought in the Mandalorian Civil War and all that.
Yeah, well, he's proving that the armor is his. The armor being his doesn't necessarily mean he's a Mandalorian, because Mandalorian is a creed. Being born on Mandalore is a part of it, or being from Mandalore is part of it, but the other part of it is, you know, being a fledgling, and a fledgling
because a foundling,
because Mando even confirms Jango Fett was a foundling, and the armor being Boba's is just it's an ancestral thing. It's like, okay, this armor is ancestrally yours. I can't do anything about it. Whether or not you have risen to a true Mandalorian rank, that's not my business anymore. The armor is your family's. I can't say anything. That's what my creed says.
Yeah. I did
Bo-Katan points out, you mean your donors?
Yes.
I've heard
your that voice. Was so cold.
I heard your voice a thousand times.
Katie Stackhoff's delivery, the way it rolls off her tongue is so full of contempt.
Oh, yeah. And then we're back to... Sorry, you go red?
Well, the other thing is Bo-Katan witnessed Order 66.
Yes.
She saw the fucking clones betray the Jedi.
Yeah. I mean, we're back to talking about, you know, the rescue again, and like we did at the top of the show here. I have to say, of a lot of the fanboying, I just like to see what people bitch about. I don't participate in that conversation because I've moved past that in my life. If I like something, I like something. I don't. But the people bitching was like, oh, they just copied Darth Vader's scene from Rogue One. And I was like, well, father and fucking son, of course they would do that. Like, my favorite shot was where he gets to the last Dark Trooper and he does, like, the crush thing, just like a empty soda can. I was like, that. Yeah, what? Sorry?
No, sorry.
I was going to say.
Oh, sorry.
Why don't you go first?
Damn. Keep going. I'll finish when you're done.
One does not fuck with Luke's fucking Skywalker.
When I saw that scene, I was excited. Like, I was. When Luke pulled in, I actually took a. Because I used to own an X-Wing toy. And I saw instantly there's an R2 unit in the fucking droid slot. I never saw the color, but I was like, okay, it could be Luke. But in the back of my head is like, okay, they're going to reveal that it's Ezra or Cal. This is all fucking phony. And when I saw him do the Force Crush, I was like, okay, it's definitely not Luke. That's not what a fucking Jedi would do.
That's not a light side thing.
Yeah.
Well, he is his father's son. I mean, I love the fight with the one Dark Trooper versus Mando, and where he's just like punching his head into the wall because the Beskar's not going to give. But
he's getting a concussion, I'll tell you that.
Well, yeah, he's got some CTE going on or something. And then I honestly thought, well, wow, that was really easy. And it didn't occur to me that these things like have the fucking Iron Man boots on their feet, because he spaces the rest of the Dark Troopers, and then once they get Moff Gideon and they're all up on the bridge, and he's like, oh, that sounds like my backup. Like, Giancarlo Esposito, that dude is chef's kiss gold as Moff Gideon.
Like, when he delivers the line, everybody in this room is going to be dead except for me and the child. That was like the fucking perfect fucking line.
Oh, yeah. And he does so much, like, with his eyes and his face when he talks. It's, like, the same thing he did as Gus in Breaking Bad. Like, I enjoyed it so much. And then, of course, he's going to do a bitch move, like, try to, you know, off himself after he wasn't able to kill the baby. And,
well, no, you know, he panicked when he saw Luke Skywalker on the screen. And he realized who it was coming.
Yeah. And then... And he also set up something for season 3 going forward that, you know, the Imperial Remnant has this, unless it was all on his ship there, the Imperial Remnant might have Grogu's blood. Like, and they're talking about, like, how trying to clone force sensitive, like, super troopers and such like that. But I just love that he tries to off himself, and then Gina Carano comes in and just, like, cold cocks him with her blaster rifle. And,
well, it makes fucking sense, because the only people who would know that Luke Skywalker exists are people high up in the fucking Imperial forces.
Yeah.
So as soon as he sees Luke Skywalker on the screen, you instantly see fucking fear in his face. He knows what happened. He knows this is the guy who blew up 2 Death Stars, killed the fucking Emperor, and fucking
Darth Vader.
Took out Darth Vader.
Oh, no. He definitely had a brown pants moment. And, you know, you talked earlier, Ben, about guys crying. I didn't cry. I did shed a couple of tears. And not at it, I fist pumped and I was like Red said, I was a 5 year old all over again when it was Luke and he was just mowing them down. But I teared up when you see Grogu, like, fine, I'll call him Grogu, Baby Yoda, he touches Mando's helmet as he's about to let it. He's like, go with him. I'll see you again. And then he takes the helmet off, and you have that moment where, you know, Grogu sees Mando for the first time, and is like, that's fucking beautiful. And also, and you should know, folks, Ben and Red saw, I put that picture in the chat where I'll see you again, I promise. That's the Star Wars equivalent of being one day from retirement. I don't want to say I guarantee you, because I would love to see many more seasons of this, but I guarantee you they're going to end the third season with Mando sacrificing himself to save Grogu, and they leave it on this cliffhanger. Was he dead or is he alive? Like, I guarantee you that's going to happen.
Well, as I said, I kind of doubted it was Luke the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was... I wanted it to be Luke. Like I said, I was a 5-year-old kid. I was excited. I was loving every fucking minute of it. But in the back of my mind, I was like, this can't be Luke. Even when he took off his hood and started speaking, I was like, okay, it's a trick. This is going to be a Sith warrior. And then suddenly R2 came from around the corner. I was like, okay, it's fucking Luke.
Yeah. And I fist pumped again when R2 came around the corner. And that whole bit of Grogu's background of how he was originally at the academy, you know, the Jedi Temple when Order 66 came down. He's been in hiding for years and suppressed his Force abilities, and he's kind of got this self-induced amnesia. But now that he's kind of reclaimed his memories, and R2 is like, him and R2 are talking back and forth. Like, they were apparently best friends. It's like, man, I want to see an episode dedicated to their relationship.
You can tell R2 recognized him.
Yeah.
For sure. Either that or R2's like, oh, fucking another Yoda.
Yeah.
Like,
what is up, my dude? Now, there was that end credit scene where we go back to Tatooine. Bib Fortuna is Bib Fat Tuna, because, dear Lord, man, eat a salad. Like, you don't have to be Jabba to be Jabba. Yeah, and then like Fennec, I love how, I don't know if that's the same dancer or her cousin or something, but it looks like the same dancer from Jedi. You know, she's released. Fennec's dropped everyone else. Boba just 86 is Fortuna with absolutely no ceremony, sits down, and that was like Arnold Schwarzenegger sitting in the throne in the end credits of Conan the Barbarian, just him sitting there like that. I fucking love that final shot.
And then the end credits is the Book of Boba Fett.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people have been saying, oh, it's going to be a new series. No, it's not. That's the name of Season 3. Season 3 is going to start out with Chapter 1. Because I'm 100% sure it's going to start with Chapter 1, because Baby Yoda and Mando's story is over.
Well, that kind of goes against what I saw in an interview with Favreau, who says that Book of Boba is going to be its own thing, and it's actually going to come out before Mando Season 3. So at best, we're not going to get Mando 3 until like 2022. But we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yeah. And that's the other thing I got to mention here is, like, look, as much as this era or this part of the Star Wars mythos that we're getting now, I love all this stuff. But I think Disney is kind of shooting itself in the foot with, you know, we've got Ahsoka, we've got Rangers of the New Republic, Book of Boba, Mando Season 3. Like, you guys, I know you have to, like, strike while the iron's hot, but there is such a thing as you're going to drown us all with all this stuff, and then the IP is going to flounder.
They did that before, though. It's when they were doing the sequels, they're like, oh, you're going to have a Star Wars movie every fucking year for the next 30 years. And they announced all these fucking sequels and all that shit, and they went to shit because the fucking sequels fucking tanked big time.
Yeah, the IP is, it's not totally unprofitable, but it's damaged. The IP is damaged, and Mandalorian sort of brought some life back into it because it the first season of Mandalorian was so good. The second one is still good, and that has a lot to do with Favreau and the other guy whose name escapes me right now.
Dave Filoni. The dude, yes, with the cowboy hat.
Yes. The two of them made magic. They made Star Wars again. So it's like, what can you expect when you have all these other directors? Because you have to keep in mind, they were handing Star Wars projects out like Tic Tacs.
Yeah.
And so we're going to get some really bad series and movies, too. Like, they're going to give Josh Trank a Star Wars series, for crying out loud. Thankfully, they backed out of doing that.
They're also going to give Fat Face fucking Rian Johnson fucking his own series as well.
Yeah. They're, like I said, handing them out like Tic Tacs. Just oh, you get a Star Wars series, and you get a Star Wars series. It's only because of how ridiculously pants on head retarded Josh Trank is came out to the press that Disney's like, okay, we shouldn't give him a Star Wars series. That's the only reason why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of the Star Wars stuff they announced is like, yeah, I want to see the Ahsoka series. You know, I'll check it all out. It's just
other than Mandalorian, the only one that really interests me is the somewhat confirmed, nothing really solid given about it, Obi-Wan series, because Ewan McGregor is a pretty damn good Obi-Wan Kenobi, as long as he's not being like this really weird show-offy, well, hello there guy.
Oh dear, they are going to make that his catchphrase in the show. Mark my words.
Well, the original Obi-Wan said that as well.
Once.
That's literally the first fucking thing he ever said.
No, the first thing he said was,
oh, yeah. But literally the first fucking English thing he ever fucking said was, well, hello there.
Yeah.
But I don't have a lot of fucking faith in the Obi-Wan series because I've heard so many rumors about it. Like, Obi-Wan's not even going to be the main character from what I heard. I heard they're doing some kind of female fucking shit. I don't know.
What, he let his lightsaber loose and now he's got an illegitimate daughter out there?
Well, technically, yeah, her name is Rey.
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be Rey. It was supposed to be, that was supposed to be Rey's mother or father.
Yes.
They set that up in Clone Wars and it was ignored.
You know, they had ended where I'm Rey Kenobi, I would have been like, fuck yes.
Yeah, that only solves one brick in the foundation.
Hey, Ben, I just said I would have liked that. I didn't say it was going to fix anything. Because there's too much wrong with that movie to fix. Although I do love that rumor. They're like, they're going to ignore the sequels. It's like, yeah, probably not. Would be nice, but not going to happen.
I promise you, I 100% promise you, the Disney CEO walked down to Favreau's office, put his hand on his shoulder, and said, look, John, we need you to save Star Wars. You get to do whatever you want, and the sequel trilogy doesn't matter anymore. You could give it a middle finger on screen. Just save Star Wars. He would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, he would, but unfortunately that CEO has a name, and the name is Kathleen Kennedy.
Well, I'm talking about the CEO above her, the actual Disney CEO.
Yeah. That Disney CEO chewed her out.
Yes.
Nothing changed.
You're right. But what I'm saying is that's never going to happen. He's never going to walk into Jon Favreau's office, put his hand on his shoulder, say, look, Jon, we need you to save Star. That's never going to happen. But if it did, he totally would. He totally would ignore the sequel series, the trilogy. He would totally make it really obvious that the sequel trilogy is null and void, but he doesn't have that luxury. He is working in the confines of what he has, and he's still making magic doing it, so.
It is what it is.
Just like everything else, people are going to start sticking their fingers in it, and it's going to get worse and worse.
It's already starting to happen, and Favreau was able to at least direct it, control it, wield it, to where stuff that in any other situation would be pointless fan service just for the sake of fan service is actually propelling the story forward. Like Ahsoka's appearance propelled the story forward. Boba Fett propelled the story forward. It's not pointless fan service. It's fan service with a point. I totally believe that that he had an outline in his mind when he started season two that didn't rely on Ahsoka or Boba Fett, and he was able to work it in. But again, that's my opinion on it.
I actually watched a YouTube documentary about why you like The Mandalorian, and why you do not like the sequels.
Is it with the show Don't Tell with
I don't remember who did it, or else I would tell people their information. But they pointed out that The Mandalorian is directed in George Lucas's style, and it's one of those things where you may not have noticed, but your brain did.
Yes.
Because George Lucas has a style where he directs things where one thing leads into the next thing, and it's organic the way it does it. Something will introduce someone else, and that person will introduce somebody else, and blah, 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 and it'll keep going like that.
Yes.
And that's George Lucas' style, and that's the way The Mandalorian was directed and written, whereas the sequels were not. They did not have an ounce of George Lucas's style in it, and that's why they feel so fucking wrong when you watch them.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, this is the comfort food for the soul that I think a lot of fans have been waiting for ever since the prequels, because I don't know about you guys. I know some guys personally who, I know one individual, and I'm not going to give his name, he made a Linkara-like proclamation when he saw Phantom Menace.
Okay.
Which amounted to like how Linkara very infamously said he hates One More Day so much that he will never read another Spider-Man comic until they undo it and wipe it from history. Good fucking luck. I have a friend of mine, and he's still a friend. It's just this one of these crazy things that he said. He hated the prequel, like Phantom Menace, so much. He has not watched one iota of anything pertaining to Star Wars since 1999. I think it's bullshit. I can't say that unequivocally that he totally hasn't, but he swears that he still hasn't. I'll take him at his word, because I'm just like, really? Like, look, I'm not a huge fan of Phantom Menace, but
well,
it's part of the story, man.
I hate to stick up Phantom Menace, but it is a lot of good ideas badly done by somebody.
It's
George Lucas did not direct the original Star Wars. He came up with all the ideas for it.
Yes.
If he had passed the buck and had hired another director in order to do the sequels, they would have been great. And they probably would have followed the same storyline. Because there is things in there like the whole Qui-Gon shit. Qui-Gon was a traditional Jedi. He's what a Jedi should be. Where all the other current Jedi are all politicians and fucking under the thumb of the government and all that shit. And that's not what they're supposed to be. Where Qui-Gon didn't fucking follow that. It was pointed out in the series. If he had trained Anakin, there would be no Darth Vader. But he didn't. He died. And that's what the whole first show, that's what the whole first movie is about. It's a fight over Anakin's soul.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, George Lucas cannot direct fucking water out of a bucket. And
well, he wants to have two monitors so he can, so he only needs to turn his head.
Yeah.
And his coffee goes here, and sometimes he forgets to shout action or cut.
Yeah, basically.
These are things he's actually said.
Yeah. No, it is, but I mean, Mando season 2, 2 thumbs up. couple of nitpicks for me, and
I'm impressed with how much Favreau was able to keep the fingers digging in too deep from upper management, because I think his experience after Iron Man 2 sort of hardened him on that, because Favreau pretty much was the midwife for the MCU when he made Iron Man, and he bent on a lot of things for Iron Man 2 that he regrets. And I'm glad that he's showing some backbone now.
Yeah. But
Mando 2, Mandalorian 2, love it. It's easily worth the $7 to subscribe for just 1 month, watch the whole series, and then unsubscribe again. JT?
Watch it, watch it, watch it.
Red?
I'm watching. It's a good fucking show.
Yeah. So I think we're unanimous that Mandalorian Season 2 is good. I personally think it's as good as Season 1. Your mileage may vary. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
Say goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.